Good morning. I'm going to call the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum. The clerk will note the roll. We appreciate that we have a number of bills here to hear today, and we're going to move pretty quickly on some. So we are, first of all, talking about industrial hemp, and we have Representative Vang. So I'm going to, as she's walking up, we're going to have the minutes approved, hopefully. So Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from the last meeting.
Okay, so minutes from the March 5th, 2019 meeting are up for approval. Is there any changes or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. So welcome, Representative Vang. And I know you have a couple of people that are going to be speaking on some of your bills as well, but we're just inviting you to present your bills and your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is my intention to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill, and I would like to move 1660 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you, Representative Vang. And everybody has the bill in their packets, and we believe that you also have an author's amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. So I would like to move my amendment and move adoption of the House File 1660-A3 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Vang. Would like to move adoption of House or H1660-A3, the amendment. Any discussion initially to the amendment? You want to just describe the amendment?
Yes. The Amendment 8.3 strikes a reference to a specific date by which the commissioner must submit a plan to the USDA to allow the department more flexibility. NDA is currently waiting on federal guidelines regarding regulating industrial hemp, and due to the government shutdown, that has delayed the process a bit, and therefore impossible to submit a plan by August of this year. So this amendment just strikes the date to not hold NDA by this date while waiting for the federal guidelines.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Any questions? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. So you may go ahead with your testimony.
Yes. So currently the hemp industry is budding with popularity and interest. I'm particularly excited about hemp because it is an indigenous plant to my people. We have used hemp for our clothes and in our way of life, so I'm happy that Minnesota is a prime spot for the hemp industry. As we all may know, the latest farm bill enactment authorized the commercial production of hemp in the U.S., setting in motion what would be a resurgence of agricultural hemp production, economic development, and job opportunities for Minnesota. And in order to foster a robust hemp industry and economy, we as a legislature must take certain steps to ensure the industry in Minnesota has necessary tools to promote production, processing, marketing, and manufacturing opportunities here in Minnesota. And with that in mind, House File 1660 proposes to provide some clarity for the industry and conformity to the new federal law. Section 1 of the bill conforms the Minnesota definition of industrial hemp to the new definition. Section 2 clarifies that possession of the industrial hemp legally grown in other states is permitted. Section 3 provides a clarifying cross-reference in Chapter 152 that the definition of marijuana does not include industrial hemp as defined in Section 1 of this bill. Section 4 requires the commissioner to submit a plan to USDA and request primary regulatory authority as permitted by the Agriculture Improvement Act of 2018. And I will stand for any questions and appreciate your support for this measure. And I also have a few testifiers here who can testify in support of this bill, too.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill author on line 11 of page 1 of your bill, you mentioned extracts. Could you define what you mean by extract? What makes up the extracts of the process?
Yes, I believe I can refer this to my testifier who can explain more about the process.
And welcome to the committee. Please state your name and then if you heard the question, to answer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, my name is Henry Erdman. I'm here on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 1189. Extract, Representative Paul Anderson would be through the process of extracting the essential oils, essentially, of the plant, and that could be a CBD formulation or other cannabinoid consistent with the federal definition.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, we've been told that when the process of extraction occurs, there are some other things that are a product, namely THC. What do you do with that?
Mr. Erdman or Representative Bang?
Yeah, so thank you, Madam Chair. The legal definition of hemp is a threshold of THC is 0.3%, and so when hemp producers are growing, it can't produce a THC level content more than that. And my testifier, Henry, can also explain more about that THC level as well.
Mr. Erdman.
All right. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, this is consistent with what's in the federal farm bill, and this is essentially the United States government has now removed industrial hemp from the Controlled Substance Act. So in the process of this, I'm not an expert on the extraction process in this particular sense, and I don't know if there's anyone here in the audience who can answer that, but those are some of the issues that are going to have to be dealt with going forward, and those are some of the buttresses and guardrails that we'll need on this program to make it successful for the state.
All right. I think that I don't know if Ms. Place wanted to be able to present anything, or if you needed any other, if there are any other questions? No. Okay. So I think Representative Vang, then we could go. Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify for or against this bill? Okay. I see no one. So Representative Vang, any closing comments?
No, I just want to thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate all your support.
Thank you, and you will again renew your motion that House File 1660, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. All right, thank you, Representative Vang. The bill will be laid over. So we're going to move on to the next bill that you have.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1661 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division.
All right, Representative Vang. Again, I believe you have an author's amendment to this bill.
Yes. I would like to move the House File 1661-83 amendment.
All right, and could you speak to the author's amendment, please?
Yeah, the amendment contains technical corrections and cleanup language proposed by the department. I also have Whitney here who can also testify if there's any questions regarding these amendments as well.
All right. Any questions, discussion about the amendment? Okay, I don't see any. So all those in favor of adopting the amendment, the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So now you can speak to the bill as amended.
Yes. So House File 1661 opens new doors for new markets for hemp and is critical to realizing the full potential economic impact of the hemp industry in Minnesota. The lack of market opportunities for hemp proved a significant barrier under the industrial hemp pilot program. Passage of the Farm Bill will now open new doors to new markets, and we can have an impact now. To that end, House File 1661 authorizes Minnesota hemp growers the opportunity and regulatory framework necessary to sell their hemp to Minnesota's two current medical cannabis manufacturers, a ready-made market for hemp producer. So the crux of this proposal as it relates to this committee jurisdiction is contained in Section 1, as amended, which authorizes the sale from licensed hemp growers to the medical cannabis manufacturers. The remainder of this bill makes corresponding changes to the Medical Cannabis Act in Section 152 and is under the purview of the Health Policy Committee. So thank you, members, and I ask for your support in creating this new market for Minnesota hemp growers.
All right. And I believe then again we have testifiers for this bill. So, Mr. Erdman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Henry Erdman on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1189. UFCW represents agriculture and food sector workers as well as medical cannabis workers in Minnesota. I'm here today to voice our support for Representative Bang's bills on hemp and thank her for bringing them forward. We are very optimistic about the trajectory of Minnesota hemp industry and the opportunities it presents not only for the agricultural sector, but also economic development and good-paying jobs that strengthen our state. Industrial hemp has thousands of real-world practical applications, from food to fuel to fiber. The possibilities here are only limited by one's imaginations. Bioplastics, composite materials, construction materials, including hempcrete, insulation, carpet fiber, textiles, 3D printing polymers, cosmetic additives, nutritional protein, biofuels, and nutraceuticals, and other value-added products. I could go on longer, but I will not, Madam Chair. Each day, new applications are being identified and developed. Nurturing new markets and fostering new jobs will require investment and commitments from this body to establish the processing facilities necessary to realize the full economic potential. Once processing facilities are established and the hemp plant is divided into different application materials, manufacturing of new products will begin. What this industry lacks at present are large-scale processing facilities. Recently, the state of New York announced a hemp processing facility location in upstate New York that will employ several hundred workers processing industrial hemp. Other states around the country are working to attract processors to their states, and Minnesota should be leading that charge. We have a tremendous opportunity to develop an industry that is sustainable, renewable, and beneficial to our state, fostering investments and economic opportunities for farmers, entrepreneurs, and good-paying jobs across all areas of the state. United Food and Commercial Workers are committed to working with this body and others to move this industry forward at all levels. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erdman. Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. To the testifier or to the bill author, what parts of industrial hemp would be of interest or marketability to the cannabis manufacturers?
Representative Bang or Mr. Erdman? Mr. Erdman?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it could be raw biomass to be extracted at those facilities. It could be different polymers, distillates, isolates of the cannabidiol, CBD. It just depends. We won't know until we actually authorize this under law what they would want to have as an input from the agricultural community.
So it's a preemptive strike to some degree. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, and this is through the bill author. So we've got an industry out there that that deals with this right now with for medical marijuana. So do we have a testifier here from that part of the industry, not the worker, but the owners that can shed a little light? Have you discussed this with that element of the industry?
Representative Bang.
I believe you do have some testifiers in the audience.
Uh-huh. Here they come.
We have some people that come before the committee. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Buck McKelpin. I represent Leafline Labs, one of the two medical cannabis companies. Great questions on the CBD. In our cannabis facilities, and I'll talk about Leafline Labs and medical cannabis, we have about a 42,000 square foot grow. We have to grow both THC and CBD. If we could acquire CBD outside of our facility from a Minnesota grown manufacturer, that allows us to expand our canopy of marijuana plants to have more products for the patients, which we heard in Health Committee the other day. We have an access problem, and we continue to go up against the wall of how much product we can make to meet the demand. So we are very supportive of being able to access CBD to include into our products.
Representative Lewis.
I guess, what, if any, impact would this have on the other element, and that is the medical, pure medical marijuana? My understanding is that we've got enough raw material stacked up there to meet the demand right now, but that's probably only speculation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Lewick. Like I kind of said, and from our research and lab folks that work on this, I believe we can bring outside CBD in now. We just have to list it on our labels. I have to defer to the department to validate that. that the CBD came from outside of the Leafline Labs internal grow facility. But it's really just a capacity that as we extract oil, we're an oil product that makes the medicine. That's a very extensive process to extract cannabis oil out of the cannabis plants. That, as Mr. Erdman testified to, there's all kinds of different cannabinoids we find in CBD and the THC side of the product, that having a different source that comes in besides what we have to physically grow really adds to what we can do to produce more medicine, which hopefully reduces the cost of the product, too, to the consumer.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. McAlpern. Yes, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. Christopher DeLaForest representing Minnesota Medical Solutions, which is the state's other licensed manufacturer. I don't have anything to add to what Mr. McAlpin has testified to, but I did want to get on the record as saying both the state's licensed manufacturers strongly support this bill and thank the author for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. DeLaForest. Okay, any other questions now? And we have another testifier, so welcome to the committee if you want to state your name and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Charles Levine, owner and operator of Hemp Acres and a board director of the Minnesota Hemp Association. I have a written testimony to submit to the committee. As an entrepreneur in the hemp industry, I'd like this opportunity to give my support to Representative Vang's bills to move Minnesota hemp industry forward and create new market opportunities for hemp farmers. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Thank you for the information. And we have somebody from the Department of Ag. So welcome, Mr. Chesseth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Chesseth, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I just wanted to take a brief moment to come up here and thank Representative Vang for her leadership on this issue and just publicly state the department's support for both 1660 and 1661.
Thank you, Mr. Chesseth. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1661? All right. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, Samantha Vang, Representative Vang, do you have any further comments about this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Please support this bill, and I renew my motion that House File 1661, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. Thank you.
Thank you. That motion is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The motion prevails, and House File 1661, as amended, will be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. Thank you, Representative Vang. Now we are switching gears a bit and going to be talking about chronic wasting disease. And Representative Becker Finn has a couple of bills that will be presented to us. So welcome to the committee. We know this is a growing issue, and there's been lots of publicity about it, lots of discussion about it. And so we're also aware that Dr. Thompson from the Board of Animal Health is continuing to work with Commissioner Stroman at DNR to address the issue. So, and I know that I believe the, I don't know if they were both in the audience, I can't see, but I know that Dr. Thompson is here, so if there are questions. But welcome to the committee, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you mentioned, there are three different bills, but they all are related in that they all deal with chronic wasting disease and what the response should be to that. So if you don't mind, I can just speak, you know, overall to all the bills at the same time.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. So what we're going to do is we've done this kind of before, that we might bring a couple of bills before us so that we can discuss them all at one time. But House File 229 right now is the bill that it does not have any fiscal note, but it will, but does have an amendment that you're going to be bringing forward. Okay, so I think I will move House File 229 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill to get it before us. And then there is the amendment And so I will move the 229DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author wants. So if you want to describe that amendment so we're a little bit clearer on that. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the DE2 amendment incorporates, there have been ongoing conversations on the Senate side, on the House side, with Board of Animal Health, the Department of Agriculture, and DNR. And so this incorporates some of the language that was discussed that Senator Ingebrigtsen is carrying in the Senate. And then has some additional provisions. So essentially it incorporates the language that's already in 305 as well as the language that's in Representative Herr's Bill 1362 as well as some additional provisions. So it's just kind of continue to be discussions. These are, you know, some options that have been discussed as ways to address this issue.
All right. Any questions about the amendment? Otherwise, the amendment is before us, and that is the DE2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. No. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. This amendment does do some things that changes the bill and does include some rulemaking. We're going to listen to testimony and get through that before we make a determination about what we're going to do with this right now. But I know that we also have another amendment, I believe. So I don't know if you wanted to address Representative Miller's amendment at this point or if you wanted to talk about the bill and have witnesses. And do you want to
I will follow your guidance, Madam Chair. I can speak to the bill overall. I haven't talked to Representative Miller about the amendment, but it seems to be relatively minor.
Okay. Representative Miller, do you want to present your amendment?
Sure, Madam Chair. Thank you. And I will say for House staff, I didn't know the DE was there, so I think some of these line things need some technical changes. Is that just kind of acceptable that he works that out? How do you want to do that? Because it doesn't line up anymore with what would you like to do, I guess, is what I'm asking first.
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Miller, you're correct that your A1 amendment would amend the bill prior to the DE amendment, so the page and line numbers don't match. If the A1 amendment is also adopted by the committee, the bill's laid over but then moves again later in the session, I'll make sure to incorporate the A1 amendment provisions into the bill as amended. If the committee adopts your
bill. Yeah, Madam Chair, that's acceptable if that happens.
Okay. That's
okay.
Yes, that will be okay.
And I appreciate it. And I apologize. I wasn't anticipating the DE. I should have been doing that, so my apologies.
You know, Representative Miller, why don't we go ahead and have the testimony and hear all of that, because maybe that will just be cleaner, and then we can do
sounds
the
good.
Amendment later.
Yeah, so sounds good.
Thank you. So, Representative Becker-Finn.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So initially, I just want to talk a little bit to give folks a little bit of background on chronic wasting disease, on CWD. So this is what we do know. Chronic wasting disease is a TSE, transmissible spongiform encephalopathy disease that is very similar to mad cow disease. And Creutzfeldt-Jakob is the type of disease that's also involving prions. It's very similar that humans can get, scrapy and sheep. All those are TSEs, and they're caused by a prion. And prions are very unique. There are not many things that diseases that are caused by prions. So it's not a virus. It's not a bacteria. It's essentially a mutated, misfolded protein. And because of that, it's particularly difficult to contain it. You can't bleach it off of a surface. You can't, if I threw it in just a normal, like, fire, it wouldn't die. So I think that's what some of the stories you may have heard about zombie deer, and that, you know, it's not a zombie disease, but it is a misfolded protein that causes severe problems to the neurology of the affected animal the affected animal. And it also remains in the environment. So it's not like when you think of a a normal virus or bacteria in the way that we as humans contain that disease. Prions bring up some really unique circumstances in the way that we have to contain it, because we can't just bleach it off, or, you know, it won't just die. It will continue to maintain in soils, in the environment. And then the other important piece to recognize is that it has a relatively long incubation period when an animal is infected. And essentially what that means is that you can't tell by looking at the animal whether they're infected. And during that incubation period, they are shedding these prions in the environment and the places, you know, especially the places they eat and spend the most time. And so you can't necessarily tell just by looking at, you know, whether it's a captive deer or a wild deer, whether they have the disease. And so that makes it really difficult to manage the disease when it's present in a herd. And related to that, we also don't have a test to test live animals. So, you know, there probably are infected deer both in facilities right now in our state and in the wild that do have CWD, and we just don't know it, and we may never know it, because you can't tell until after the animal's dead, and then you would have to have the ability to test that that material. So it's a particularly difficult disease to contain, you know, more difficult than some of the other diseases that we maybe have had to work with. As far as the increased risk of transmission, and I will say, you know, overall, the provisions in these bills are based on best management practices and what we do know about chronic wasting disease. And some of the other hearings we've had in other committees, there's a lot we don't know. And you know, a common question I assume someone may ask is, you know, can humans get, you know, be infected? What we do know is that for a very long time, it's been recommended that people do not eat meat that's infected with chronic wasting disease. However, there's not an easy way for a normal person, you know, a hunter, there's not a quick, easy way to test for that. And so there is some concern that there is contaminated meat that's likely been ingested at some point by people. There have been no human cases of the disease at this point, but some disease specialists believe that that's just a matter of time. But I do want to say, too, even if it can't be passed to humans, it's still very troubling, because you do see population impacts, because it spreads and animals get sick. And, you know, it just is not what we want for a healthy either captive herd or wild herd. So as I said, a lot of this is based, I've read so much on prions and chronic wasting disease, and this is, you know, based on science, and there's a very lengthy technical report on best management practices for prevention, surveillance, and management of chronic wasting disease that has a lot of, where a lot of these recommendations come from. And one of the higher risk areas is when we have, with any disease, is when we have animals in enclosed space, in close proximity, you know, that are eating in the same space or sleeping in the same place or touching each other. It's the disease is spread through primarily through saliva, bodily fluids, that kind of thing. So, you know, and then animals being moved from place to place by humans, you know, you're kind of increasing the vectors in the way that the disease may spread that wouldn't naturally happen in the wild. And I do want to say, you know, it's I've been contacted by a lot of people about these bills, and, you know, nobody is happy with the fact that we have to deal with this disease. It's not about pointing fingers. It's not about necessarily, you know, why or how, but we do have to deal with it going forward, and that's really what I'm interested in. You know, I think that deer hunting practices are going to have to change. You know, captive cervid industry practices are going to have to change. And to be honest, it doesn't feel fair to anyone, but it's the reality that we're in, and I think, you know, as legislators, it's our job to take on these tough issues. So there are bills to address the hunter and natural resource side, but obviously this is the Ag Committee, so we're just focusing on these bills today. It's a unique disease in a unique industry that is going to require unique management practices to help spread the disease going forward. And at this time, I would like to move to some testifiers. There are a couple people here. I think first I want to invite John Zahnmiller up. He is here on behalf of the Bluffland Whitetails Association. We weren't sure which person was going to be able to make it here today, but John is here to speak on behalf of that organization.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Zahnmiller. I'm a member of Bluffland Whitetails, and since I live closest to the Capitol and weird weather's coming, I'm frequently tasked with coming up here to watch the goings-on. CWD, I'm going to do my best not to repeat things that I'm sure you've all heard a million times, but this hits right at our heart area. We had a positive about 2 miles away from my deer stand. As I said in a previous appearance, it's weird sitting in a stand having buck fever and a sense of dread at the same time. Deer hunting is as much of Minnesota as water skiing, as fishing, as the ever constant disappointment of the Viking season. It has got a profound financial impact on us as well. Every November, there's a lot of orange that's going to come over those hills, and they contribute hundreds of millions of dollars to our local economies. So when I talk as a deer hunter, it's not just me that's impacted by this. It's the small-town diners, the taxidermists, the restaurants and the sporting goods that are all at stake. Additionally to that, I can say that when I talked with one of our members who's a commercial property, recreational property real estate agent, I asked him, what is chronic wasting disease doing to the value of recreational property? And he said, we've already seen a 15% decline on recreational property within chronic wasting disease endemic areas. That's 15% that's going to have to be made up in property taxes somewhere else. That's going to go on to the farmers. That's going to go on to the small business owners and to the homeowners. So as we see decreases in that value, largely due to decreases in the hunters and the hunting opportunities, we see it make a real impact in more than just the guy in the orange suit up in a rickety old stand. We support the bills that Representative Becker Finn has put forward, and I'll speak briefly to each one of those. I could speak long, but you're a busy committee, and my wife is famous for telling me I need to be brief and shut up. 229, the bill regarding fencing. We look at this as an important thing because there is a threat to two industries here. It's not a cure-all, but a double fencing requirement will help to protect both sectors, in the farms and in the wild. We also support 305. Limiting the expansion of turbid farming in Minnesota is prudent right now until we have a better handle on it. On 553, we believe that the transfer should go back to the Department of Natural Resources for many reasons. The first is this. The Board of Animal Health is comprised of veterinary professionals and producers. There is no citizen input as a regular member of that board. There are probably a dozen citizen advisory boards throughout the DNR. When I look at the makeup of the board of the Board of Animal Health, I don't see that consumer protection, that consumer input. There's millions of people in Minnesota that barely know that the Board of Animal Health exists, and it rivals the Area 1 Potato Advisory Board in terms of its imprint in the public's mind. The DNR has far more capabilities to supervise these operations, these cervid operations. As it sits right now, the Board of Animal Health did an excellent job overseeing our state's cattle, pork, and poultry producers over the years, is being pulled in a different direction. That's resources, time, and expertise that's being pulled away from our traditional and historical livestock operations. We feel that it's in the best interest of everyone to return the supervision of the cervid farming industry back to the Department of Natural Resources, which is far better able to address their needs, the supervision, and to take public input on how to address the problem of chronic wasting disease. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, you said the DNR is much better equipped. I guess I'd like to understand that a little bit more on what you mean by that. The Board of Animal Health, especially when it comes to transporting livestock, like you said, you acknowledged the great job they do in the livestock industry. Again, how is the DNR better equipped to handle farm survey?
Mr. Dan Miller.
That's a fair question. The numbers, the personnel that we've met, and the reports that we read, we believe that the research department that's available at the Department of Natural Resources, as well as working with other state partners, is more capable of addressing the issue.
Representative Hamilton.
My other question is, I've been deer hunter, I'd say all my life, but the last few years I haven't hunted as much.
You and me.
Yeah, so you can understand. And one of the practices, when I was successful, we'd field dress a deer.
Certainly.
And so you'd leave the guts, for lack of better words, out in the wild. 100%, to my knowledge, and we'll hear testimony, 100% of farm survey are tested for CWD. What percentage of deer in the wild are tested for CWD when they perish? And in the event if an animal is harvested through hunting and field dressed and it tests positive, what happens after that?
Okay, well, so there's two or three questions in there, Madam Chair, if I might. Mm-hmm. And forgive me, it's part of my, I bounced my head off some concrete in my accident, so I might need a reminder. The number of wild deer that have been tested is a fraction of the number that are out there. I'll tell you that right now. There's cost. There's just, how do you do it? How do you round up a few hundred thousand deer and test them when really the only test to our understanding is a post-mortem examination? So that leads to another one of your questions when you raise the prospect that all farmed cervid have been tested for CWD. I'm curious how all the live ones have been tested.
That's fair.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, thank you. 100% of the harvested cervidae,
yes,
on farms have been tested.
Yeah.
Mrs.
And
Dendo.
So to my point then, what percentage of the harvested deer taken in the wild, or even roadkill for that matter, are tested?
I couldn't give you that number, but I'm certain that somebody from Board of Animal Health or DNR has probably got that available.
Okay, and then my other question about field dressing.
Certainly.
In the event a deer is taken and it's found to be positive for CWD, then what's the next step?
You know, it's interesting that you talked about that, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't.
That's okay.
when we were talking about the bill that's floating out there now for a test, I raised the issue with a couple of legislators by saying, this is going to create another question. It's 4 o'clock on a Sunday. The season is closing. You've shot a deer and you take out this wonderful new rapid test that the University of Minnesota has developed. And you've got a buck down and it tests positive. And while you're looking at your results, you see the 14 pointer walking in. And you think to myself, am I going to tag this and turn it in? Or am I going to shoot that 14-point and put that tag on there? It's going to create another question that I think is going to be independent of this bill. But definitely, we do need to look at some way to deal with infected carcasses. Temperatures of over 1,000 degrees is what I'm hearing for burning them, but better yet is an alkaline digester, and right now the only one of those is at the University of Minnesota. They're not a part of these bills, to my understanding, but I can see that as both a question and a challenge we'll face as we go on with this.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the dialogue. I'm a hunter myself. I understand what some of the concerns are around that, and I appreciate that. Also involved in agriculture, I can definitely understand, the passion on that side as well. And I get a little concerned when I hear comments in opening statements that, on the CWD, the first comment was humans can get it, and then it came back, said no human cases, and then even if humans can't spread, or even if it can't be spread to humans, that's alarming with those opening comments. And And I want to stick to, you know, the facts at hand. And when it comes back to switching this from the Board of Animal Health to the DNR, the Board of Animal Health has over 100 years dealing with issues such as this. And I asked the question to the Board of Animal Health, and I'll do it again today, whether or not they have the resources to address this, because this is a serious issue and we need to take it. And if they don't have it, then what is the request in order to do this? And I think it can be in conjunction with the Department of Ag. But on the ag side, I am very worried that we'd be pulling this away from the Board of Animal Health. I think we should address this just like we've addressed it, bovine tuberculosis, whether it's avian influenza or others, to bring in all the individuals that have the knowledge and expertise to address it, and make sure that we as legislators then step up and make sure that they do have the resources. But to the testifier, I want to thank you for coming out and be willing to engage in the conversations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to be clear, I never said that humans can get it. I said that the advice from the health organizations is that we should not eat infected meat. Maybe you misheard me, but I
didn't misheard you.
Yep.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
I heard what I heard, and I wrote down as the testifier, and if I'm wrong, I'll apologize, but there was one statement that said humans can get it, and then there was another statement that said no human cases, and then a third statement that said even if they can't spread to humans, you need to take it seriously. And so, again, this is a very sensitive topic, and so I want to make sure that we're doing our best to stick to, you know, the facts of it, if you will.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Peckerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think maybe you misheard it. In my opening comments, I was talking about mad cow disease and about other types of prion diseases. And there is a prion disease that humans can get, which is Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And that is the Creutzfeldt-Jakob variant is the disease that humans got from eating infected cow meat in the mad cow outbreak. So believe me, I have read more articles and more science on this, and I would not in any way mean to say something that isn't fact. To me, this is all about science, and the science is that we know that other prion diseases have spread to humans. We know that some scientists are telling us to be concerned. We know that even more scientists are telling us the risk is there, so don't eat the meat. But to be clear, there have been no confirmed cases where they've been able to prove that it was from eating infected venison. And to be clear, I still eat venison. I don't want folks to think that they shouldn't be eating venison. It's the protein base of my family's diet, and I want to make sure the public knows that, you know, if you're hunting in a non-endemic area, the risk is probably pretty low right now. But, you know, continue to follow the what the disease organizations are telling us and the guidelines that the DNR has.
We're going to move on. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hamilton. I'll just give you an example, my example of hunting in the CWD zone, and my farm is in the zone. And I took three deer. I hunted in the regular season. I hunted in the Christmas season, and I hunted in the landowner season. And so the last season, which was in January, the deer that I got, I didn't have gloves with me. I was a long way from the road. I gutted that deer up to my elbows in that deer, and what I had to do with that deer is field dress that deer, and those guts were in the woods, take that deer and had to cut the head off, and I took that head to a DNR head box that was on an Amish farm because they were not able to drive it to the DNR office, so they'd set up head boxes. And then I tagged that deer, and then I took the deer to a butcher shop, and I had to wait for the results. So I still had the remains, so the butcher gave me the meat back before I got the test back. I also got the bones, the skin, all of those things back, and I kept those until after I got the results. Luckily, my deer was negative. And so then that deer could be disposed of in a dumpster. If it had been positive, then all that extra material would have to go to the and the meat that I paid to get butchered would have to go to the U of M, to that lye digester, which is what is needed to break down that deer. So that was the last one. The one before that, we actually, all the deer in the CWD zone had to be on Christmas brought to the Preston location, and every deer, the lymph nodes were collected, and then the same type of thing. So those two hunts, I think they're about a 600 deer, the first one, maybe 250, 300, the DNR could correct me on that, on those. But then when we got to the landowner one, there was smaller numbers, it was more dispersed. And then I believe they did the same thing in Houston County. So every deer in those zones that in the first weekend of the regular season had to be tested. And I think the first positive last fall was from an archery season deer. DNR could correct me if I'm wrong. So that's a little bit about how hunters in the area where there's actual a CWD zone have to change their behavior right now. And when we move on this, there's pieces that are in my committee, pieces that are in Chair Poppy's committee. One of the bills I think Representative Becker-Finn has also put in is a Wisconsin program providing for dumpsters, because we're going to probably have to change the way we as individual hunters deal with the carcass remains, both whether they're positive or not.
Right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for that as well. And I think the things that all of us can agree upon is that we need to take this very seriously. You know, the gentleman that testified first, you know, he said that it's a threat to both sides, right? Whether you're talking about farm survey or deer in the wild. And what my biggest fear is that we become battling between one or the other. And I don't think it needs to go there. I think the individuals that are hunters, very passionate, and we should protect what it is that they're doing, absolutely. Without a doubt, I would say that same passion is there for the Farm Survey, and they want to do everything right. And, you know, the vast, vast majority of them. And same with the DNR and the Board of Animal Health. I think that they want to be part of the solution as well. And so it's troubling when, if we start going down a path where there's one villain in all this, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I think everybody can be part of the solution here, and there doesn't have to be a villain, if you will. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Cleveland.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative, for bringing this important issue to the fore. I would just like to say, in listening to the testimony today and listening to Representative Hamilton talk also, it would make sense to me that if we are trying to control a disease, both in a farming population and in a wild population, that it would be an important thing to have one agency keeping track of what's going on in both places. Because it is a disease that we're talking about. We're not talking about bad farmers or anything like that. Because I, like Representative Hamilton, would want to make sure that we don't have a villain in this process. And so to have the DNR do both wild and farming, I think would make a lot of good sense. I don't know if you would want to speak to that anymore or not, but thank you.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I mean, you're right. And that's really been the problem. There was an audit of the board related to captive cervid businesses, and I mean the problem really and the reason for House File 553 is that, you know, we've tried this kind of joint authority thing, you know, one side of the fence, the other side of the fence, and it really comes down to the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources are charged with things that are sometimes in conflict. And so the board's job is to protect livestock. And for some folks, you know, that extends to protecting livestock industry. And the Department of Natural Resources' job is to protect natural resources. And, you know, so those things are sometimes in conflict, and I think that's kind of why we've gotten to this point, is both are trying to do the best that they can, but it's become, I think, impossible to comprehensively address this disease in a way that is going to actually slow down the disease without, you know, kind of saying who is taking the lead on this. And I think for me, it comes down to, you know, the Department of Natural Resources and the wild deer herd exists for everybody. And in addition to that, we in Minnesota, and Minnesotans, some folks don't even know this, we have a constitutional right to hunt. And so if our wild deer herd is not protected as a natural resource, then that right to hunt is impacted. Because I think the right to hunt is not the right to kill. And I think hunting means that you're going to use the meat and, you know, use it for other purposes. And so, yeah, it's a difficult issue, but you bring up a really good point. Madam Chair, I'd like to move to my next testifier, if that's okay.
We have a couple more questions first.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say, you know, having conflict and tension is not the worst thing in the world. We actually should have checks and balances. So I would speak in favor of keeping it, the situation the way it is. The Board of Animal Health does a stupendous job managing animals and taking care of things. And I think that we will have some tension on this issue in this room even, but I think that we need to, again, be as respectful as possible. We do have an issue. Representative Hamilton said it well. I mean, it is an issue that we're all facing, and we're going to have to figure out how do we come to a solution that works. And some people are going to be less happy than others, but we should try to be respectful that we do have deer farmers that are doing great work, and we do have a disease that's become more prevalent, and we need to deal with that. So that's my comment. And we have next, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments. Representative Becker-Finn, I didn't write down the words of your opening statements. I'll take you at your word. But I think just mentioning the fact that there's a warning or some wording that you need to be careful to eat venison, I think puts out an implication of a danger that I'm not so sure is there. The research I've seen would show that prion is not accepted by the human body. And again, I think we don't want to put fear in the hearts of people. And again, I didn't write down your words, but I got the impression that you were also saying that you may not want to eat venison. So just be careful there. And the other thing the first testifier mentioned was that he's seen a shift in property taxes, that some hunting land has become lower in value. And I would suggest that the same thing could be true for Cervidae farms. If they do not run their operations, their facilities would go downhill, their corrals, fences, and such, their barns would not be used probably. And that would also cause a property shift because the value of that land would also go down. So I can see that from both sides, Madam Chair. And, again, we have to work together and to come up with some solutions here.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Next we have Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one of the things that kind of troubles me about this approach, and that is to simply shift the responsibility, the entire responsibility to the DNR, and I guess, and maybe the bill author can answer this, how many district veterinarians does the DNR have, licensed veterinarians out there that are operating across Minnesota looking at the wildlife throughout the system?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Madam Chair, obviously I do not have that number off the top of my head. I know the DNR is here. I believe they employ biologists and veterinarians.
I want to be very clear. We're talking about veterinarians, completely different ballgame here, because there was a comment a little bit earlier by one of your previous testifiers, and I'll not try to repeat it precisely, but what I heard, my impression was that the Board of Health just doesn't have the talent and the expertise at that level, and there's a concern about, you need to understand, and it's easy if you're in agriculture, the reason we have a Board of Animal Health is not to protect the animals. It is there to protect the food source and the people. That's what these veterinarians do. Yes, they do that through maintaining proper health of animals and removing diseased animals, but the whole basis for that is not to just be nice to animals. It's because these are food animals. So I heard that, and it really bothered me. It's a matter of just maybe education and not understanding why we have a Board of Animal Health. But let's get back to, and maybe the DNR could explain to us precisely how many veterinarians that are qualified. They're on our staff right now that can do that same work that the veterinarians they're employed by the Board of Animal Health. I'm not just talking about the five folks, the folks that are on that board. I'm talking about, I want to see a comparison here.
Thank you. And we do have somebody who came to the table, so welcome. State your name. And
thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Grant Wilson, Acting Director of Fish and Wildlife for Minnesota DNR. Madam Chair, we don't have any veterinarians on staff. We work closely with veterinarians at the University of Minnesota for any needs we have there.
You have none on staff? No veterinarians in the DNR?
Mr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Oh, okay. Well, interesting. I met one. Maybe she lost her license a few years ago when we were working on a tuberculosis thing, and that's Ms. Karsten. She's still employed there?
Mr. Wilson?
Madam Chair, Representative Lubick, I don't know what her qualifications are.
Okay. We can agree there might be one.
Wait, maybe some.
Madam Chair,
yes.
So we do have a wildlife health program with experts in wildlife health, including PhDs, including Ms. Carstensen. But in terms of actual veterinarians, mm-hmm. We don't have any on staff currently.
And then I guess what I'd like to hear, maybe we've got someone from the Board of Animal Health could lay out what their footprint is on the state of Minnesota, where their veterinarians are, and also the relationship and where the federal veterinarians are, and these folks are dealing with the protein, live animal food source, both animals and poultry. So I just want to see the comparison, because if you're going to take over what the Board of Animal Health do, you better strap your boots up. And I don't know how many positions you're going to have to add, but it's going to be pretty significant. But again, I'd like to hear from the Board of Animal Health. What does their footprint look like across the state of Minnesota?
All right.
Relationship to veterinarians.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. I think we're going to, I know that the Board of Animal Health is here, and I know she will be available to answer that question, but we're going to actually go back to Representative Becker Finn. She has some more testifiers, so we're going to get through the testifiers that she has. The information may or may not be able to be put on the record today. We might be able to get some things in print form. So I'm going to turn it back to Representative Becker Finn. You had some more testifiers.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And my next testifier did travel some distance to be here, so I do want to make sure he has an opportunity to testify. So if Mr. Findave...
Welcome to the committee, and just state your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Buju, Minnewaban, Indigenekaz, Lenny, Finde, Mukwa, Ndudame, Ndujikaz, Gamishkawa, Wakag. My name is Lenny Finde. I come from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I'm an attorney representing the tribe, and thank you very much for hearing my testimony this morning. I am here to just convey the position of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe to the committee regarding chronic wasting disease. As you may or may not know, the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe has a unique relationship with the state of Minnesota that is codified in Section 97A.151 of Minnesota statutes, which goes back to 1971, which was a settlement of federal litigation regarding the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and our people's right to hunt, gather, and fish within the boundaries of the Leech Lake Reservation. And this unique relationship that Leech Lake has with the state of Minnesota is in regard to co-management of hunting, fishing, and regulating that activity within the boundaries of the Leech Lake Reservation, as well as the 1855 treaty territory. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe was created, the reservation was created by the 1855 treaty, which predates the establishment of the state of Minnesota by 3 years. The right to hunt, fish, and gather was guaranteed by that federal treaty, and as we know that in the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, that treaties are the supreme law of the land. The position of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe with regard to chronic wasting disease is that we feel the state has an obligation to regulate the disease so that the disease does not impact the wildlife herds within the state. Otherwise, that would impact our right to hunt, fish, and gather, which is guaranteed by that federal treaty and which the state has agreed to co-regulate with the state of Minnesota as a result of Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe versus Herbst, which was decided in 1971. So the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe feels that the bills presented by Representative Becker Finn are a very good start in that direction in regulating this disease and protecting the federally recognized rights of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe to hunt, fish, and gather in our ancestral lands.
Thank you for your testimony. All right. Do you have another testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair. Briefly, you do have, I believe you have a document in your folders from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. And Mr. Bennett has promised to be very brief since you do have the letter in front of you.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bennett.
Madam Chair, Corey Bennett, representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I will speak as quickly as I possibly can and try not to be redundant. I know that there's a lot of people here to be heard from, and so I get to visit with you every day, so I will be very brief in my comments. I just wanted to come up and first off say thank you for all of the bills that have been introduced on this issue. We are grateful for that. Thank you to all of you for having your doors open to having conversations about Minnesota's deer and deer hunting traditions, and thank you for your support in that regard. And I also want to say thank you to the survey industry. We have had good discussions, I believe, and hopefully they'll be ongoing as this session continues, and hopefully at the end of it we can have some sort of comprehensive package that will address this issue. Certainly, as far as the Deer Hunters Association is concerned, after our corporate board meeting on the February 23rd, you'll see in your packets that the Deer Hunters Association did come out with what we feel was a very strong, comprehensive package. We had a lot of discussions. The weekend was completely filled with discussion of CWD, as it seems like these hallways have been since the start of session. So with that, you'll see in your packets, as was mentioned, there is a outline of what that package is. We are supportive of the DE2 amendment, at least some large portions of it. Other portions we are neutral on, but certainly we thank the legislators for bringing this forward. Again, this is the most serious issue, I think, that has faced us and our industry in my memory, and certainly probably maybe within the existence of our organization. So thank you for all your time, and thank you for your support of Minnesota deer hunters and our deer hunting tradition. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. All right. Do you have other testifiers? One more?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to ask the DNR to come back and speak to the response of the DNR, and this really is directly tying to the ag piece. When we have a positive at a facility, at a captive deer business, what does that, what are the ramifications of that on the DNR side?
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, again, for the record, Grant Wilson, Acting Director of Fish and Wildlife for Minnesota DNR. So just briefly, once we have an initial discovery at a captive facility, we do have a response plan that goes into place. That response plan is currently being updated. We're going to be engaging with the public on that pretty soon. If it depends on the time of the year, if it's in the spring, we work with landowners to try to cull deer through the end of March while they're still concentrated. If it's another time of the year, we'll just continue with opportunistic sampling, things like roadkill around the site. And then we work to create a disease management zone eventually, which is 15 miles at least around the site. And then we begin a process of more intensive sampling. So we've spent in the neighborhood of $150,000 per year around each of these facilities that have tested positive in surveillance. And once we have found wild positives, it becomes a bit more expensive. So we certainly are very concerned about this and have prioritized this issue. Very clearly, it's an important threat to deer hunting and the deer herd in the state. So it's something that we're taking very seriously and have appreciated the opportunity to work with the author and as well as the Board of Animal Health and Department of Agriculture to try to find solutions. Anything that we can do to reduce risk on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. All right. So now we have some more questions. So we'll go back to questions. So Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll hold off on my question for now.
Okay. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that Dr. Thompson with the Board of Animal Health is here, and I would like to hear from her, how they would handle this and their abilities. I'd also like to hear from the DNR about, their abilities and how they can handle this if this is thrown over to them. And what kind of extra resources they would need if that happened.
Thank you. I think that's a fair question from Representative Poston. So if you would, Mr. Wilson, be able to answer that for the DNR.
Madam Chair, members, so I will speak to House File 553. This actually is not something that this authority is not something that the DNR is seeking. We're certainly working closely with our partners at Board of Animal Health and Department of Agriculture, as I said, to try to reduce risk wherever we can. But we're not sure that this is something that's necessary at this time. It's not something we're seeking. So we haven't dived into what it might mean in terms of ramping up.
Thank you. Representative Poston.
Very good. Thank you for that. And if we have Dr. Thompson coming up at some point,
yes,
that's great.
So I think, Dr. Thompson, if you're available, maybe you could come down now and be able to answer that question since it's right topical. There may be other questions that come up for you, but welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Beth Thompson, I'm the State Veterinarian and Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. And if I may restate the question, what it would look like if the program, the Farm Survey Program, was transferred from the board to the Department of Natural Resources?
Well,
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Thompson, I'd just like to have you talk about your abilities at the Board of Animal Health as it pertains to this issue.
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, and members of the committee, the Board of Animal Health is a state agency. I checked this morning with our business manager. We have 44.4 positions. And the reason for the 0.4 is that we are a small state agency. We do lean on some of the other state agencies for portions of positions. We currently have 8 veterinarians that are out in the field. We also work cooperatively with United States Department of Agriculture and use their folks who are also out in the field. And right now there's 5 positions with the United States Department of Agriculture veterinary positions that we also utilize. Importantly, too, because this is an agriculture issue, we utilize veterinarians throughout the state, the private veterinarians, so accredited veterinarians in their working with those ag farm service producers. Specific to the issue of chronic wasting disease, in the past year, we've hired a couple of people specific to that program within the Board of Animal Health. We have an assistant director and also a senior veterinarian at the board that are working on that program, in addition to a couple of office staff, and then doing additional training based on that audit that was done a little over a year ago, looking at those recommendations, too. I don't know how much more detail you want me to get into, Representative, but that's an overview of what the board does.
Representative Poston.
Madam Chair, Dr. Thompson, thank you very much. It seems that your organization is very capable, and like Chair Poppe, I think you do a great job. So I hope this stays in your hands.
Thank you. I know we have a number of questions. I'm not sure that they're all for Dr. Thompson, but we're going to go ahead and go through that. And we have the room until 11:45, so we are going to get through any testimony and any questions before we conclude. And so the next Representative Wozniak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are actually for the Board of Animal Health, so that works out pretty well. Dr. Thompson, I'm wondering, I have a couple of, I took a look at the OLA's report that was released in April 2018, and there were several things in that report that I think are big concerns, and a couple that I want to just mention for the record, and then I would like to hear what the Board of Animal Health is doing to address those concerns. A couple, the BAH has failed to enforce some deer and elk regulations. That's a big concern for me in terms of CWD. And also that the BAH does not systematically analyze whether producers submit CWD testing samples for all deer and elk that they report as deceased. So I'm wondering if you can address those two concerns specifically, but then talk more about what BAH is doing to address some of the other issues that the OLA found.
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee. So first of all, to the enforcement portion of that, we have put into place additional training procedures for our staff as they move through some of these different regulations as they relate to cervid farmers. And I can get into more specifics, and I can actually give you great detail on some of the additional trainings that we're doing, maybe offline. I don't have them right here with me, but that is some of the work that we're doing specifically with our staff. There has also been educational components that have gone out to our cervid farmers, and they would probably be better to talk to the information that they've received from the Board of Animal Health, but better explaining what those regulations are and what they need to be doing. And then lastly, we are putting into place, and I think they're starting now within a month, as to samples that are taken by our farmers and private veterinarians out in the field, we're putting into place a series of trainings for the farmers, those people that have the deer and elk and other cervid species, and also the veterinarians that are taking those samples. So trying to hone in on those specific details of what it means to be a cervid farmer in the state of Minnesota. The second, systematically analyzing our data. Again, I don't have that detail here with me today. I apologize, but we can certainly get to that data if there are specific questions or specific information that you would like to see.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of quick questions, I think maybe for the DNR testifier, if he could stop back up.
Not go very far.
And my question has to do with the CWD-positive wild deer found in Crow Wing County. I believe that's where it was. Is that a known area for massive dumps of deer carcasses? Is that, I've heard that, I just want to know if that's true.
Mr. Wilson.
Madam Chair and members, I really can't speak to that. I would have to go back and speak to staff more to understand that.
Representative Anderson.
Could you check on that?
Absolutely.
And then my last question to you, has there been any research done as to soil types, that the prions would last longer in a sandier type of soil, or any work done in that area?
Mr. Wilson?
Madam Chair and Representative, I don't have that information, but Representative Becker-Finn may.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are studies showing that clay soils are a more hospitable environment to maintaining the prions. So there is some difference depending upon the soil types. And again, it, you know, not to bring in all the other bills on this, but that's part of the reason for wanting the U of M to do some additional research, is there is a lot we don't know about this disease. But there are some studies that show that clay soils would be more problematic in maintaining the disease in the environment.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got just a couple of one thought. So this is an issue that's relatively new to me. So I've been working the last since we've gotten here on learning and understanding how this moves, and to me it's mostly as Representative Hamilton started discussing about villains and different things like that, this to me as a new person to understanding what's going on with this disease, there's not a villain or a hero on either side whatsoever. This is a public safety and a public health issue that directly interfaces with what I think we should be doing here in the ag committee, with working together. And so I also, with Representative Anderson's comments about the fact that we shouldn't be talking about the fact that this could potentially be pushed into the human sphere, is really important that we understand that there's a lot of research going on, and there are some suggestions that it absolutely can at some point. And so we can't minimize those things as we are discussing this today and as we're talking about how we can do what's the best things for the state of Minnesota. So I have a question for Madam Chair, the Board of Animal Health. Again, sorry.
Okay, playing, going back and forth here. So we'll try, yeah, and maybe both should just stay close to the table there so we can get through. But Dr. Thompson is here. Okay, Representative Tabke.
Yeah, thank you. So with as we've been dealing with the CWD outbreak and those everything that's been going around that and how it's been affected by the survey industry and farms, can you explain to me how and why, when we had avian flu, it was a complete depopulation of the farms? When we have other things that are going on, how is this industry, just so I understand, different than those as farmed livestock?
Dr. Thompson.
And why are they treated differently, I guess, the better way to ask that.
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee, that's an excellent question, and it's, somebody did bring up the OLA report, and if you get your hands on this report, if you go to page 40, it talks about the 11 chronic wasting disease events in the state of Minnesota in farm service. And if you look down through that, you will see that they were, until the crow wing herd that's still standing on the ground, but all of those, it talks about the depopulation. So each one of those prior herds that was standing on the ground where they found an infected animal or animals, those herds were depopulated. And if you run down through, I'll just go back to 2002, there was one elk of 49. The whole herd was depopulated. 2003, there was one elk in a farm of 21. The herd was depopulated. In 2006, there was one deer and 22 farm deer, and two farm elk were tested. There was one positive. So that's a good outline of what's happened in the past. Mm-hmm. Is that an answer to your question?
Representative Tabke.
Madam Chair, yeah, thank you for that. So what was different with the crowing that was handled in a different manner?
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee, at this point in time, indemnity for herd depopulation comes from the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA. It is up to the herd owner. We do not have that statute in place that allows us to just go in and depopulate the herd. In the past, the herd owners have accepted that indemnity and gone ahead and depopulated the herd.
Okay. Perfect. So thank you. And then
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with regard to costs and fees, how much does the state bring in fees from Survey Farms? And then with that, how much has the chronic wasting disease mitigation cost for all the different things we've been doing in the state of Minnesota for that?
Captain Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee, generally speaking, over the years, the amount that has come in through the survey account is right around $30,000 to $40,000 possibly. But certainly the board's costs are much more increased with regard to that program because of the work that we do. I don't have a specific number specific to CWD-related activities, but farm servants in general.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to switch a little bit to genetics and genetic selection. Representative Becker-Finn, to you or one of your testifiers, has the resistant gene in deer been identified, the resistant gene to CWD?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is work going on that, but I don't, you know, it's hard to prove a negative. And so it's not clear, you know, there isn't a clear way to say this thing definitely will stop an animal from ever getting chronic wasting disease.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, I believe that there is a way, and it's identifying the resistant gene within the deer. And I believe that has been identified, and I would stand corrected if anybody wants to dispute that. And so my next question is actually for Mr. Bennett, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Bennett, on your handout here, you have one of the MDHAs calling on the legislature to support the following. You have prohibit of interstate movement of any captive cervidae byproducts, including blood and semen. My question is, if there is a farm that has tested positive for the resistant gene, why would we prohibit the semen from being brought to one of the farms here in Minnesota when, in essence, our cervidae farms could, after one or two offspring, a generation or two, be 100% resistant to CWD? Why would we prohibit that?
Mr. Bennett.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, that's a good question. Because right now I don't believe, at least to the best of my knowledge, that we have identified if there is a resistant gene or not. Whether that, you know, and how long those genetics would be able to take place, how long that those genetics be able to transfer from one animal to another, from one farm to another, I don't think we have that knowledge right now. And that's why it's a part of this position.
Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would like to know the answer to that, or if there's testing being done to identify the resistant gene. I mean, this is something that is done throughout, you know, livestock mm-hmm. industry, animal agriculture, and so I'd just like, I guess, to know more information on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hamilton, you know, as I stated at the beginning, this is ongoing discussions with the board, with Ag, with the, you know, the representatives from the different groups. So, you know, the idea with the stopping the interstate movement is that we know that chronic wasting disease can be spread through blood and semen. And, you know, obviously we don't want to be bringing in an outbreak. You don't want to be bringing in any, you know, opening yourself up to any additional vectors where the mm-hmm. disease could be brought in. But I appreciate the question.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Becker-Finn, this is where I think that the animal agriculture could actually assist with the dealing with this issue. You know, the ongoing testing in conjunction with, we need to develop a live test. I think we all agree upon that. And I would be more than happy to support funding to the U or others to do that. But through the ongoing testing, identifying gene selection and whatnot as well, I think that farm cervidae could play a big role in eliminating CWD. And going back to Representative Tapke, thank you for your comments as well. And what I'm afraid of when I say that about finding a villain, what I'm afraid of is when people get nervous about this, like we all should be, we will point finger at one entity. And that's what I'm afraid is taking place. I'm not saying that it is, right, but that is a fear, okay? And that's why I bring it up. But I think that this could be a key solution as well, dealing with CWD in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we've got three more people on the list, and so we're going to go to Representative Miller next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a quick side comment, I have a commitment at 11:30 okay. that I cannot get out of, so if we can do my – I'll be brief on my amendment.
Yep.
And you can but I want to make a quick comment first with the conversation between the Board of Animal Health and the DNR. Some of the questions were, what will this look like? How is this going to work? Is it going to be successful? We had a sample case 4 years ago with avian influenza, high path avian influenza, and we went in, and if everyone remembers, Board of Animal Health, which, by the way, I sing your praises every time because they did incredible work during that time. If you remember, we separated it out where they were going to take care of the farmed animals, and the DNR had to check on some things in the wild. And if members that were here at that time remember, we gave the DNR added money to do that. It was significant. I forget the dollar amount, but it was significant money that we get to them. And quite frankly, Madam Chair, I'm concerned because the DNR really didn't do that work. They spent the money, but they really didn't come back with any of the results. And it's maybe just the way that the Board of Animal Health is set up as opposed to the DNR. But to say that two completely different functions in the state of Minnesota, or a completely different function, could be transferred from one agency, which has, as Representative Hamilton said, has 100 years of experience in it, to switch it over to a very large department like the DNR is very concerning. That's just a comment. That doesn't go to my amendments. I don't know when you want to do those. But I just want to have that on the record. I don't see the transfer over to the DNR as being successful at all.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Why don't we go to your amendment okay. at this point for this bill?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, everyone, for giving the flexibility, especially testifiers who are probably wanting to get in here. I can't get out of this 11:30 thing, so thank you very much. One quick comment before I go into my amendment. We've been talking about a villain, and Representative Cleavorn and Tapke, there is a villain in these bills, because these bills, all four of these bills, are about farm survey. They aren't about wild survey. They aren't about what we do with that. They are about farm survey. And this is in the Ag Committee when we're talking about this, and so I have a real problem with that. To that, I'm kind of disappointed that the Ag Committee, which is entrusted with the support and advocacy for agriculture, that we are considering these bills going into law. However, if we're going to do that, if we're going to go after agriculture, I do have an amendment that will at least address one survey animal, which I think, based on what I'm seeing on these bills, can be acceptable. But I will be forthright and honest that I'm concerned that this starts with deer and then it goes to maybe another animal, and then eventually to cattle. And then when we talk about diseases, there may be sheep. And a lot of these bills are about putting the industry under notice that they are going to be highly regulated and controlled. And one thing that we all know in agriculture this year, folks, is that it's real tough, okay? And it cycles in different animals. Dairy's terrible right now. There are times where hogs are difficult. But if we're going to start placing these things on very serious. I don't want to diminish CWD, but there's going to be other diseases as well. And if we start coming in as government and saying, well, we're going to control this, you farmers, especially when we're talking about it's very inconclusive as to whether it's farming or it's wild deer, we don't know. That's the best we can answer is we don't know. Okay? But if we're going to go after the ones that we can quantify, as Representative Hamilton said, we have an advantage with farming that we can test all these animals. We can find this gene. We can do stuff like that. So what my amendments, and they're both essentially the same thing, reindeer are farmed, believe it or not, in Minnesota. There are a few farms. And to my knowledge, unless someone corrects me, there is not a vast wild reindeer population. And I hear that that's one of the concerns of the crossover. So I'm asking that perhaps at least we can single out reindeer and pull them out of this. If nothing else, as a statement that we aren't going to progress outside the deer. I hear the arguments about white-tailed deer. Okay, that has nothing to do. I'm very concerned when I hear about mad cow disease brought up in this same committee, because is that next? So I want to make sure that we don't go to cattle, that we don't go to cows, that we don't go to all these different things, because this is our industry in Minnesota. These are the most responsible people we have with animals in Minnesota. So, members, if we can at least put the stopping point at white-tailed deer and serve a day as reindeer also, if we can pass an amendment that this excludes reindeer, that's at least the least that I can get out of this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cleaver.
I would just like to just take a personal moment here to say that the insinuation that members of this committee are trying to attack agriculture. Most of us are on this committee because we really appreciate the agricultural industry in this state. We have an important state investment in agriculture, and to ask for clarification of bills or to ask questions about proper departments is not an attack on agriculture. We greatly respect agriculture, and speaking for myself, I felt that to be a personal attack, and that is not something that I would want to continue on this committee. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Representative Miller.
We could fix that right now, okay? So this is not an attack.
Okay, we have the amendment before us, but Representative Miller, I'm just going to say.
These bills, that would be my next ask, okay, after
Representative
the amendment.
Miller, okay. Let me just interrupt you. These bills are before us because they do impact agriculture. So I think there is a reason why we are hearing these bills. Because there is an impact to agriculture. So I did not want to avoid these bills, because this is the place to have this discussion. So please just know that, as I mentioned before, there is tension in the room, and there are competing interests, obviously, but to avoid this issue would not be the right answer. So that's why we are hearing these bills today in this committee.
Chair, and understand, I have complete and utmost respect for you and everyone in this room, and we can settle that issue right now, because I'm not saying you're attacking. I'm telling you that these bills are attacking agriculture. And so we can have a motion after this if you want to table these bills so that we can step back and talk about a more comprehensive thing. I'm not going to ask for that. Don't worry about that.
So we have this amendment before us, the A1 amendment. And so Representative Hamilton, you had a comment about the amendment?
Actually, I have a question for the member of the other caucus, Representative Miller.
Oh, yes, there you go.
I'm please. Sorry, I found that.
You were waiting funny. For that word.
Yeah, I did. So, again, why, and just help me understand, why are we singling out reindeer in this? If you could please, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, really two quick answers. Number one, I had some farmers that farm reindeer that asked me to come forward with this specific one, but I thought it was a good step. Also, reason number two is this is a good step to say that this isn't going to expand. We talk about policy in here, and it has implications down the road. We take steps along the way. And so I want to ensure everyone here that if we're going to be talking about white-tailed deer, that we're not going to expand that.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, reading this and listening to testimony, I am afraid that we're picking winners and losers here, if you will. And so that's my fear with this amendment, not saying that I don't think we should protect the reindeer also, right, from this. But, again, my fear is that we'll be picking winners and losers.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn, did you have any comments about the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will note I just asked Dr. Thompson, I don't believe there's ever been a positive CWD on one of the reindeer facilities. I do know on my map, it looks like there's only maybe 7 reindeer facilities in the state. So I guess I don't get a vote in this committee, but okay. I'll leave it up to the committee.
All right. So Representative Miller has made his case regarding this amendment, and I'm just going to – Representative Cleaborne, did you have a question?
Well, please forgive me. I am new to the committee. Mm-hmm. So I just want to ask, because this amendment amends the original bill and exempting reindeer – is it in order for this
bill?
Yeah,
we've already addressed that.
I just want to make sure that I'm thinking properly.
Yep.
Okay.
We are allowing it to the amended bill because
I just was making sure.
To the DE. Mm-hmm. All right. And then we're going to defer to Mr. Sullivan just to clarify, providing clarification.
Madam Chair and members, just want to clarify that If the A1 amendment is adopted and I'm to incorporate it into the bill as amended, just want to make sure I understand Representative Miller's intent. Because the A1 amendment, as he mentioned, was drafted to the original bill, which only established new fencing requirements. The bill as amended includes additional items now, fee increases, indemnity assessments, allows the DNR to do inspections. So I just want to make sure I understand that his intent is that Reindeer would be exempted from all new requirements that are in the DE2 amendment.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Miller.
I'll withdraw the amendment for now, and I'll withdraw the other one also.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Representative Miller. I think it is clear to me that this bill is not clear, and it is not necessarily completely ready to be on the House floor. But we are hearing it, and we're certainly having the opportunity to discuss it. So, is there anyone? We do have other bills that we're going to hear. This was kind of the crux of the one. I think that we have a few people that wanted to testify, so if they want to come down and testify on this bill, I think now would be the time to do that, and then that might probably mean that we're not going to have as much testimony on some of the other bills. But so I appreciate that we need to hear all sides, and we have now Mr. Quillis, so if you would go ahead and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm a contract lobbyist here at the state capitol, and for the last 20 years, I've had the honor to represent the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. And the Elk Breeders have 80 members. We have 75 facilities in 87 counties. We have members that have herd sizes as small as 20 and herd sizes as large as 2 to 300. Madam Chair, our average herd size is 42. Most of our folks do not do it as a hobby. We do it as supplemental income. Most of our folks are corn or soybean farmers or other livestock farmers, and besides working in town, they use this as a supplemental income for them, Madam Chair. I also wanted to point out that we used to be, unfortunately, we used to be the number one producing state of elk by different variations in the nation, but unfortunately we're still in the top five, but for various reasons we are still one of the nation leading states for elk. But I just wanted to point out I look forward to providing background and information, and thank Representative Hansen has stepped out, Representative Becker Finn, previous conversations with Representative Hamilton, Representative Anderson, and you, Madam Chair, allowing us to be part of this conversation. And it's an important conversation that we need to have in this state. From the Elk Breeders Association, I'm sure you're going to hear from the Deer Breeders Association too. We don't want it in the state. Our members have made a rather large financial investment in this, and we don't want it here either. We'd like to stop it also. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, and we can have that discussion later on, but at least try and slow the spread of it. The DNR, the Board of Animal Health, the University of Minnesota, the deer hunters, the deer breeders, we've been having some good constructive conversations, Madam Chair, and I look forward to being part of those. I know you're short on time. We haven't even started talking about the DE2 yet, so I want to leave. I know there's some other people that wanted to testify, but just a couple of points to keep in mind when we talk about certain things. Dr. Peter Larson has been doing a great job from the University of Minnesota, and he's the point person for the $1.8 million we've talked about to go through and do some more live testing and some other research and development that Representative Becker Finn has talked about. And we talked about the prions, and when we talked about fencing, he mentioned that it, unfortunately, whether it's skunks, raccoons, birds, they're going to move, no matter how many fences we put around there, they're going to move that prion around. And so that is concerning, and we worry about that. And as I can't remember if it was Representative Hamilton who mentioned it, but Dr. Larson, as I said, has been out visiting our facilities, and we thank him for that. But we are also going to be help them go through and do these tests because it's really hard for them. As Mr. Zandmiller pointed out too, you know, for us to go around and chase them and try and test them. So our facilities are going to be able to be kind of the test lab for them. And Madam Chair, like I said, I know you're short on time. I want to get you back on time to let you go through. And I pledge to keep working with Representative Becker Finn as we go through there. And I know there's some other people that have traveled. I'd like to give them the time to testify. I'm here every day and more than willing to come, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So I know we have some people from the deer farmers, so we're going to bring them to the table, all of them to the table at this point. So if they can just come step down. Anyone who's going to testify, please get to a chair so that we can do this. And again, we've got 20 more minutes. We're going to get through all of these bills. This is primarily the one that we wanted to make sure get heard, the DE2, some, and that kind of fits with many of these other things. So I'm just going to turn it over. So go ahead and introduce yourself and begin.
Madam Chair, Tim Spreck. I'm another one of those awful coin-operated boys down here. My objective today is to bring a few deer farmers before you. We've got three people queued up. We're going to go as quick as we possibly can, but please understand that this is a very passionate issue. Mm-hmm. We've got at least a dozen to 15 more in the audience. I'd like to encourage everyone who has time after this hearing to please speak with our people. These are real, hardworking farmers. They are doing deer farming, a lot of them because they had trouble in other areas. They were dairy farmers. They were cattle farmers. They gravitated to this industry because it allowed them an opportunity to keep their families on the farm and to perpetuate the dream that we all know as Minnesota agriculture. With specific regard to the bill, I've got this bill totally marked up. I could spend a half an hour on it. But the most important message for me to deliver to you today is if this bill is passed as written, it is the death of deer farming in Minnesota. And with that, I'd like to bring up my first testifier and thank the committee again for your time.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to have the testifiers to come forward and be able to state your name, and then I apologize, I'm going to have to limit you to just a couple of minutes each. So we're going to get started, though.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dr. Scott Josephson. I'm a veterinarian from southwestern Minnesota. I own and operate Tri-County Veterinary Clinic in Taunton, and I am a member of the advisory group for the Board of Animal Health for the Cervidae Farms, and I also spend a significant amount of time doing laparoscopic artificial insemination on white-tailed deer farms across the Midwest, so I get a lot of exposure to these farms. I'll be quick as possible, just to let you fellow hunters' minds at ease to a certain extent. I've done, I'm a deer hunter myself. I'm going to read from a study that was done that included the National Institute of Health, and I talked to the biochemist that was involved with this study. These studies have been repeated by several different groups with different models that have come to the same conclusion. I'm just going to read just one sentence from the end of their discussion. Fortunately, additional laboratory data are consistent with the epidemiological data, and these results support the conclusion that a species barrier protects humans from CWD infection. And that research has been repeated several times over. So hopefully that will allay some of our fears of our fellow deer hunters. I think that we need to expand our view of this particular disease. I think we need to look at the role that the environment does play in the spread and transmission of this disease. We know we've talked about carcasses, taxidermy waste, gut piles, and so forth, both hunter-killed carcasses and roadkill carcasses as being a possible source of the prion causing contamination of the environment. But studies have also shown that predators and scavengers, coyotes, foxes, eagles, hawks, crows, will pass the prion through their digestive system and leave it in an infective form in the environment. And we know how these predators and scavengers will travel, and they can spread the prion. So I think that to look at one specific cause or to focus on one specific source of the infection being as farm cervidae as the cause or the villain, as some people have said, in this situation is probably an overreach. Soil types have been discussed. There are soil types that actually render the prion non-infectious, and I think that more study needs to be done on that, particularly the prairie grassland soils. And if you look at the demographics and the geography of where the CWD exists within our white-tailed deer population, you will notice that exists in boreal environments, tundra soils, mountainous soils. But prairie grassland soils contain humic acid that can render the prion to be non-infectious. So I think more study needs to be done on that. Now, one other comment that I'd like to make along those lines, and that is, how do we identify where the disease is coming from? This is a study done and presented by the Elk Research Foundation that was published on February 26th of this year. It shows that it discusses the fact that when we have a low incidence of infection in both the wild population and the farm-raised deer population, how we arrive at where it's coming from. We know that we test. There's about an 85% to 90% compliance in testing of the farm cervidae that are harvested or found dead in the farms as far as CWD is concerned. And we've also heard that it's a very low incidence of testing of the farmer or of the hunter harvested and roadkill deer. As a matter of fact, it's less than 0.1% of those deer have been tested in the last year for CWD. And this is I'm quoting from their research here, that it says that analyzing the data submitted by state governments, if chronic wasting disease exists in a state or county but has not been detected, it is highly likely that the disease will be discovered in the farm servant population first because of the sheer greater numbers collected and tested. As an example, in Indiana, with no presence of the disease based on the state's 2012 data, now, this is the important part. If chronic wasting disease existed at an equally low prevalence in both the farmed and wild cervid population, it is 89% more likely that it will be found on the deer ranch first, and there's only a 3% probability that it will be discovered in the free-ranging deer first. So there we have some public research that tells us that we maybe don't know enough about the population or the spread or where CWD is in our population, both most certainly in the wild population. We certainly know where it's at in the farm deer population. There's the question from Representative Hamilton regarding resistant genes in the white-tailed deer population. There are resistant genes that have been found in the white-tailed deer population. Now, these resistant genes don't necessarily protect as the scrapie resistant does in sheep, but they delay the development of the disease, and there's some researchers that think that it prevents these deer from becoming obex positive to the disease, and as a result of being non-obex positive, some of these researchers believe that these deer don't shed the prion until they become obex positive. There's disputing arguments about that, but that is a possibility. As Representative Hamilton suggested, that these farm deer populations could actually be the salvation of the wild deer population if we allow the studies to take place and use those farm deer herds as a live field laboratory to study both the genetics and also the way the disease is transmitted within the environment, and again, speaking to the soil contamination. There was a question about the semen the prion present in it. Now, I don't know that anyone has actually proven that there's the prion present in the semen. It is probably possible, but I spoke with one of the National Institute of Health's scientists, a biochemist from Montana, that suggested that it is possible that there could be a prion in the semen, but it's probably not very likely that it would cause transmission of the disease, and therefore we need a live test. We need a live test, and we've kind of all talked about that today and in previous hearings, but we do need a live test. But I don't think that the right way to approach this disease is to limit the use of semen, particularly if we're trying to look for a resistant gene that may help both the farm deer population and could ultimately help the wild deer population as we combat this disease. And I think ultimately, and this has been brought up before, and I think we as the general public, I think we as deer hunters, I think we you as legislators, I think the Board of Animal Health, I think the Department of Natural Resources needs to refocus how we approach this disease as far as the farm deer population is concerned. I think we need to consider them just like we do the wild deer population as victims of this disease and not as perpetrators of this disease, and try to use them in a scientific field laboratory situation to help solve this problem, because none of us want CWD to expand. I'm a deer hunter and I eat venison. My family eats venison. None of us want CWD to be prevalent in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Josephson. Okay, the next testifier, yes, go ahead. You just need to be near the microphone.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Steve Porter. I'm a deer farmer up in Lake Brunson, Minnesota. It was a 6-hour drive to get here. This is my son, Brody. I could talk about this for an hour, But I've worked in law enforcement for 29 years, both as deputy, chief deputy, and even sheriff. And I've enforced laws that are made in this state. And so I appreciate the rule of law, and I appreciate how laws are made. I brought my boy with to see part of this process. In building a deer farm years ago, I got a license to raise deer from a game warden named John Velsvog. I thought it'd be a good thing to do on a small farm and give my boys an opportunity with low economic opportunity up by the Canadian border. I started a deer farm through the DNR for 10 years. I never got inspected through the DNR. So the Board of Animal Health took over. They're doing a fantastic job. They've been on my farm. They've been diligent. They're professional. And they take this very seriously. Board of Animal Health is doing a great job. In dealing with several issues in this language on this bill that I have in front of me, I do feel like the deer farm industry is being singled out to be the villain in this. I do feel that way. The double fencing. If we're going to talk about double fencing, we got to recognize the science. I have sent in 150 brain stems to the University of Minnesota for testing over the last 15 plus years. Those brain stems have came back as no CWD. So we can start this conversation with the fact, standing on the science, that I and my farm don't have CWD, as well as 99% of the farms in Minnesota do not have CWD. It does show up on farms. We don't cause it. So if we're moving forward in this conversation with the footing and the foundation that I have a clean herd, and we're standing on that science, I have a clean herd, then why are we talking about double fencing? Is it to protect my herd from the wild deer at a cost of about $75,000 for me to double fence my farm, which I simply cannot afford? If I'm forced into double fencing, it will be the end of my farm. There's a deadline in there. People that have never stepped out in the swamp, that have never stepped in the woods, have made legislation saying, let's just have it done by, 6 months from now. If I was lucky with the water, the swamp, the mud, getting tractors stuck, I could maybe have it done in 5 years if I wanted to invest $75,000. It's impossible for me to double fence. In the deadline, I need a drought to get out there and do it. If we talk about the DNR managing the deer farm industry, working in law enforcement, every law enforcement officer, including conservation officers in the state of Minnesota, are bound to and must abide by our Minnesota Constitution and our Bill of Rights. And so what this legislation is doing is it's saying, let's take away the rights of deer farmers. I believe, this is what I feel, take away their rights to unreasonable search and seizure. These officers will be showing up on our farms with guns, tasers, mace, and handcuffs, carrying with them the powers of arrest. I don't agree with that. Whenever I had to go on someone's farm and go in and inspect stuff, I had to get a search warrant. I had to go through due process. And so these officers will be coming on the property with powers of arrest to talk to and administrate farmers. I think it's foolishness. Deer movement forms. I travel with my deer and I go around the country. Every time I take my tame deer that Brody has bottle fed, he's got up at midnight, 6 a.m., he's imprinted on him with baby fawns. He spends 3 weeks doing nothing but nursing baby fawns to get a buck tame enough to come with to a sports show. We speak to 300,000 sportsmen a year. I just came back from Oklahoma City. I crossed the state line. The language in here says, farmed cervidae shall not be moved anywhere off the premises. So what we've got is, we're going to replace the wisdom of state vets in every state that look at the history of me sending in brain stems for 15 plus years, of me having a closed herd, of me having a clean herd. All of these state vets look at it, and they take a good look, and they say, you know what, he doesn't have CWD, he's clean, let's give him a permit to exhibit in our state. One signing of a pen wipes that out. My entertainment business that I built is dead, okay? And my business is dead. Brody's fawns that he's bottle-fed, that he's made tame, that we bring with to the show, what do we do with them once our business is dead? Do we just shoot those animals, those pets that we've got on our farm, that we believe are clean and healthy animals? And the state vets that give me import permits to go to Bismarck, Oklahoma, Little Rock. Little Rock has a closed state. You can't bring deer into Little Rock. But they look at my paperwork and they say, well, it's for exhibition purposes. Let's approve it. These state vets know what they're doing. I have a clean herd. The deer movement will kill us. One last comment here. I want to comment about the Deer Hunters Association, please and thank you. the Deer Hunter Association, I have friends at home who were never voted on this. So when I hear today in this chamber that the Deer Hunters Association supports this legislation, I question that, because a lot of the friends that I called, they said, you know, it was told that we're going to pass a resolution, but we didn't vote on anything. 20,000-plus Deer Hunter Association members are also sheep farmers, cattle farmers, and everything else. They have not voted on this. It was passed at the top, but it does not, in my opinion, represent the will of the members.
Thank you for your testimony. What was your name again?
My name is Steve Porter, and this is my son, Brody, okay. And he's prepared to answer questions today as well.
Okay. Thank you to both of you for coming. I know we're going to run out of time here. So and I know people have questions, and I apologize, Representative Brand, I didn't get to you earlier, so I'm just going to hold you off a minute, because what we're going to do with these bills are just lay them over for possible inclusion. We're not going to move. We're not going to act on this one. This does have some rulemaking in it, so Representative Becker-Finn will need to just draft another bill and send it to government operations. I don't think this bill is, at this point in time, we're not going to be moving it. So we will just keep it in our possession and lay it over for possible inclusion. There's definitely been plenty of discussion about this, and so we do have a couple of other bills that, so if you just bear with me, I think we're going to do that with this bill, lay it over for possible inclusion. So it's the DE2, and that was so it's House File 229 as amended. Will be laid over for possible inclusion, Omnibus Ag Bill. So, and then I know you have two others, and Representative Herr is here. Oh, she left. Okay. So I guess then we'll just go to the next one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So 305, House File 305, is a moratorium on any new licenses to captive deer businesses, a voluntary buyout provision, and then the restriction of movement of deer from, or of service from place to place. And actually, I should clarify, 305 is specific to white-tailed deer.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. We have had plenty of discussion about this. We know the issue, and I think you know the issues. Clearly, there's plenty of moving parts, and people all need to be engaged in this topic. So that's House File. I would move House File 305 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. And any questions or discussion about it specifically? Yeah, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just real quick to the author of the bill. In the case of young Brody, who was just down here, if his dad at some point wants to sell to his son, would this bill prohibit that from happening?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Madam Chair, I guess that would be a licensing question. I don't know if the board could answer that.
Again, probably unclear on that one, but Representative Brand, I don't know if you had a comment or, sorry, I apologize. Okay, so House File 305 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hansen, did you have a comment?
Yes, Madam Chair, since we're running out of time, I would ask that all members of the committee get the link to the testimony from the veterinary college that was in my committee, so that they can see, and they can also look on my committee page for the peer-reviewed science that was presented by the veterinary college. And I also want to think of all the young Brodies who might not be able to hunt in the future if they are unable to have a deer season because of CWD.
You can provide that to us, and we would distribute that to members. Again, I know there's tension in the room. But what I'm going to say is, this is CWD is the villain, is the problem, right? That's what we need to try to resolve. So let's just keep that in mind that, as we move forward. All right. So House File 305, that is before us. I'm just going to also lay that one over for possible inclusion. And then House File 553, did we do that one?
Not yet.
Not yet. So Representative Becker-Finn, that I will move House File 553 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. And then do you have any comments about that one?
Uh, th- Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess that's actually the bill that has to do with the transfer of authority. That's not in the previous bill, but I think we've had a full discussion of that issue. And I am prepared to speak. Representative Herr had another committee she had to get to, but I can speak to her bill when we get to that one.
Okay. So House File 553, that's another bill that we will lay over for possible inclusion. So Representative Poston.
Madam Chair, will we have further discussion on this? Because, after discussing this with the Board of Animal Health, they seem very capable. The DNR seems hesitant to even want to take this on, and I think this needs a lot more conversation.
I think you're absolutely correct in that assessment. I would need quite a bit of conversation. So, but that just is what we're going to do. Lay it over. So we'll have it with us. Okay, so then we do have Representative Herr's bill, and that one is the House File 1362. So if you want to speak to that, Representative Herr, excellent. Thank you. So I'm going to move House File 1362 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. So Representative Herr, I apologize that we've had lots of discussion about all of these bills, but if you speak briefly to what your bill is.
I will be really brief. Thank you, Madam Chair. And because you've already heard, I actually was here for most of the hearing, and I got to hear what all the questions and the testifiers, that I'll actually just kind of present the bill and then ask me any questions you may have. So Madam Chair, committee members, before you is House File 1362, and this bill seeks to address the spread of chronic wasting disease, CWD, requiring depopulation of farm, cervidae, herd when an animal is infected with CWD. And before maybe we just go, I just wanted to say a couple of really quick things that for me this isn't about pitting one group against another. I've hunted probably for the last 20 years, and I actually come from a family. My husband's family was dairy farmers who lost their farm when milk prices dropped, and they ended up having to figure out what else they were going to do with those farms. And so this issue for me isn't about who we're going to demonize and who we're going to protect, but this is really about an ecosystem in which we all work together. And I know that there is no ideal situation that's going to make either side completely whole, right? And my objective always is that how do we protect our environment? How do we protect people who, from my culture, when we hunt, we actually use all part of the deer. We don't field dress because we bring the entire deer back. We hang it for a couple of days to let the meat age. And then we actually use all the internal organs. We use the bones for suits. We use everything. The only thing that we don't use is literally the head and the antlers, right? And so when I looked at this bill and decided if I would care it or not, it weighed very heavily on my heart. And because I thought there's nothing that I'm going to be able to do in the end that is going to be able to make everyone happy in this situation, but I also feel like there are already best practices. I did a ton of research about what is the recommendation around when an animal is identified as having CWD and depopulating that herd, and the funding that is available, which isn't enough at the federal level, right? And so, I heard Representative Tacky's questions and the testimony up here about what happens in other industries when we find diseases within those animals, and that what I just want to do is bring what we do within this particular industry consistent with other industries, and then figure out what can we do to ensure that once we're sort of consistent in how we address this, how do we ensure that, you know, our farmers aren't hurt by this, and that we find different ways of figure out what we can, how we can support them as well. And so this is the bill before you. This is something that I care really deeply about, and that I don't know if there's many more questions that need to be asked, since I've heard a lot of it asked already in the past hour and a half. And so I will just leave it there and open it up for any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, Representative Herr. So this is a depopulation bill, and again, this is one that would be laid over for possible inclusion. So I see no questions, so I'm just going to renew the motion that House File 1362 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. So thank you. We'll lay that over. We'll lay all these bills over. They need lots more room, lots more time, lots more discussion, and I think that I know that the work is still being done. So I appreciate that people were able to be heard today, I think, and be here. And I apologize, Representative Brand, you were the because I did not get to you. So I apologize for that. I know that there could have been fuller discussion for a longer period of time, but I think that kind of where things sit, and so Representative Becker-Finn, I don't know if you had any final comments.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So just, and I realize we're out of time, but I just want to be clear that, it's this Center for Disease Control has recommended that folks not eat deer from, it's just a public health issue, and it's not alarmist, it's fact. That's what the CDC has said. So I don't want there to be confusion from the public because it is important. My focus here is on risk. There's higher risk when we have contact between live animals and when we have movement of live animals. The problems that we don't know if the deer are clean until they're dead. And that's part of what makes this disease particularly difficult. So, these bills are supported by backcountry hunters and anglers, the Minnesota deer hunters, Bluffalo and Whitetails, as well as tribal governments. We have to do something about CWD this year.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. This is not the conclusion to this conversation because there is much more that needs to be said and talked about and to move forward on this. So I appreciate the time, and thank you to committee members for staying over for this. Meeting adjourned.